Nothing like doing a baseball podcast while watching playoff baseball. Right now, Game 5 of the Blue Jays and the Rangers going on. Welcome, everybody. Fantasy Baseball today. We are coming at you once a week during the offseason. Al is out today, so it's just Adam and Scott. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Don't say it like that. It's not just Adam and Scott. It's Adam and Scott.
It's the Adam and Scott Show.
Oh, that's something a little different, I think.
Is that, that's too over the top?
Well, Adam Scott, there's a couple different famous Adam Scotts out there, so we don't want to intrude on any potential shows they may have.
I didn't say Adam Scott Show. I said the Adam and Scott Show.
Oh, I missed it. Sorry.
Because the Adam Scott Show would just be me, because that happens to be my middle name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're Adam Scott.
I sure am.
I am. It's nice to meet you, Adam Scott.
Before that Joker who was in Step Brothers and that golfer guy, I've always been Adam Scott.
You're the original Adam Scott.
Well, to me, I am anyway. I'm sure those guys are older than I am, but I didn't know them before I was born. Whatever that means. Okay. So anyway, baseball. All right, here's what we're going to talk about. Some of the noteworthy playoff performers, some of the rookies, and will there be a sophomore slump coming up? Your emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, some of Scott's end-of-season thoughts, and Chase Utley's slide. Give me your take, your hot take on Chase Utley's slide.
My hot take on the Chase Utley slide is we wouldn't be talking about it if it happened during the regular season.
We wouldn't be what?
We wouldn't be talking about it if it happened during the regular season.
I disagree.
It would have gone completely unnoticed.
What?
And probably unpenalized.
Unpenalized? I agree with you. But we talked about the Chris Coughlin slide when Jung Ho Kang had his leg broken.
Well, Jung Ho Kang is a little more relevant to us than Mr. I can't even think of his name. That's how irrelevant.
Ruben Tejada.
Yeah, that's how irrelevant he is. I couldn't think of his name.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised to hear you say that. No, I think that it's a terrible rule. I don't blame Utley as much as I blame baseball for never doing something about this terrible rule. I have on this podcast talked about how much I hate this rule way before this happened. I think last year, maybe 2 years ago. I mean, I thought this was the dumbest rule in sports. I cannot think of a worse one. It is an injury waiting to happen, and I hope it gets changed now. But I don't think he should have been suspended, honestly, because if it took that long for them to be like, yeah, that was illegal, for Joe Torre to be like, that was illegal, it took them a while. They had to, like, really look into it. Then there's obviously some gray area, and that's an indictment of the rule.
You're a hotter take guy than I am, Adam Scott.
It was huge,
kind of
man.
A tepid
I'm really
take.
Enjoying these playoffs, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, shoot, 3 out of 4, game 5? That's what you live for.
We can't pick the Wednesday games because they're happening either now or later today, but you can pick Greinke versus what's his name? DeGrom. Greinke versus one of the long-haired pitchers on the Mets. Who are you going to go with?
Well, I initially said the Dodgers were going to win that series, so I'm going to stick with that prediction. It helps that they have maybe the NL Cy Young winner starting for them. I know DeGrom got the better of him. Well, DeGrom, they didn't go head-to-head, but DeGrom pitched better than Greinke did the first time through. But Greinke was awfully good, too. And, yeah, I'm going to stick with the original prediction.
I am, too. I think I also picked the Dodgers. But I feel like the Mets are so much better than the Dodgers. Have you gotten that sense through the four games?
Yeah. Like I think I said when we were making these predictions originally, if it was a 7-game series, I'd pick the Mets. But having to face Kershaw and Greinke twice, that's just, I'm going to pick the team with Kershaw and Greinke over any other team.
And why did they pitch David Price?
Oh, now that I can get hot takey about.
All right, hot take, Scott White.
It's crazy, Adam. It's crazy. You have David Price, arguably one of the 5 best pitchers in baseball, right? In all of baseball. And when you acquired him and installed him at the top of your team's rotation, that's what made your team the team that everybody's predicting to go to and maybe win the World Series. You were the best team in baseball from that point forward, and he was so clearly the reason why. So just because his last few appearances in the playoffs have been on the shakier side, you're going to intentionally handicap yourself by not using that player who puts you over the top in the Game 5 winner go home scenario when you already had Game 4 in the bag.
Exactly.
You know, I could understand bringing Price out of the bullpen if you weren't up 7-1 and didn't have to play again in 2 days, you know?
Right, yeah.
That's just, it's such a reactive move to say, okay, this guy's not our ace anymore. Stroman is, because it didn't go so well for him the first time out. It's crazy.
It would honestly be like Don Mattingly not pitching Clayton Kershaw on 3 days rest because he struggled in the playoffs recently.
Yeah, it would be the same thing. I mean, Kershaw, there's no comparison to Kershaw, really, but
yeah,
Price is
in
the next rung with a very limited number of pitchers.
And as Matt Snyder said when I talked about this with him on the Opening Line podcast, if you want to pitch him, fine, but at least not so much where he can't pitch again in relief in Game 5 if it comes to that.
Yeah, there was no reason for it. It was like he hadn't been used in 10 days and they were looking to get him some work. It wasn't to help them win that game. And it didn't help them win that game. It brought the Rangers back in the game.
It was really bad. And that was a great hot take from Scott White. Let's talk fantasy here. Some relevant playoff performers. Colby Rasmus enters Wednesday with 4 home runs in 5 postseason games. 7 home runs in his last 8 games going back to the regular season. Colby Rasmus is red hot, Scott. Does this matter to you at all as a fantasy analyst?
Not really. He was hot. He had 8 home runs in September, and I think it ended up with a career high in home runs overall. But this is a guy who we've seen get hot for stretches in the past, and it just never lasts, and he loses playing time, and we don't even know where he's going to be next year because the Astros only signed him to a 1-year deal. Seems like they could easily move on without him. George Springer, Carlos Gomez, and Preston Tucker in their outfield. So I think it's going to be the same story going into next year for Rasmus that it was this year.
Are you going to trust fantasy closers Roberto Ozuna and Hector Rondon next season?
Trust them to put up give me saves all year?
Yeah, are you gonna trust them on draft day? Are you gonna look at them as these are dependable, you know, above average, like top 15 closers?
I think you can make a case for that. With Ozuna, I don't know that it's entirely clear he will be closing for the Blue Jays next year. Now, he may be, and maybe they've decided this is the role they want him to fill long term, but he came up as a starter, and remember, Miguel Castro got the first crack in the closer role, and I don't think they were intending it to be a permanent situation for him either. So, I don't know, kind of like they moved Aaron Sanchez out of that role, out of the bullpen role at the start of this season, and then ultimately went back to him there. I just don't know that they've completely determined what they want any of these young pitchers' long-term roles to be.
How do you steal third base with 2 outs and 2 men on? Are you kidding me? Did you see that?
I didn't. You got me at a disadvantage here.
I mean,
I have to look at you while I'm podcasting, Adam. That's my only choice.
That was ridiculous. 2 on, 2 out, and you steal third base and you get thrown out. I think they're going to review it.
That doesn't sound like a good move.
No, and I think it was Adrian Beltre.
Ah, Adrian. You know better than that.
It wasn't.
That's what's going to cost him the Hall of Fame vote comes up. They're going to remember this play.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Beltre. All right, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm back to fantasy. Did we sufficiently cover Ozuna and Rondon? We got to talk about
you
Rondon.
Tell me. Were you listening?
Not really. I was watching that stupid play, but how about Hector Rondon and 30 saves and 34 chances for him? And one thing I noticed about Ozuna compared to Rondon, Ozuna gave up 7 home runs in 69 and two-thirds. Rondon gave up only 4 in 70 innings, so the same amount of innings pretty much. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that means anything to you.
Eh.
Okay.
Such a small number, you know.
Of innings or home runs?
Rondon loses a home run. Ozuna gains a home run. There's only a 1 home run difference between the two, you know.
Vice versa.
To me, it doesn't mean much. We're nitpicking there. We're grasping for straws at this stage in mid-August.
I need a straw then, I guess. Carlos Correa versus Francisco Lindor. I read your closing the season thoughts column, and you noted that Lindor. So Lindor was actually better than Correa?
Fantasy? Lindor was actually better than Correa. I'm not sure.
You said he was the number one shortstop since his call-up.
Oh, okay. That may be true. Or, you know what? I don't have the exact stat here.
I can look it up for you.
Yeah.
You know, the bottom line is they were extremely close. The numbers are pretty similar. Lindor, I mean, Correa had a lot more home runs, but Lindor had a much better batting average. In your mind, are they even close in shortstop rankings, Francisco Lindor and Carlos Correa?
It was after the All-Star break that Lindor was better than Correa.
Okay.
And he hit 345 with a 930 OPS during that stretch, which that was a great stretch and obviously put him in this discussion, but I don't see him as a 345 hitter and 930 OPS guy forevermore, you know? I do think we can trust him to hit for average. He has good bat on ball skills. He has pretty good speed, will contribute some stolen bases. The power that he showed as a rookie, which still wasn't on Correa's level, but the amount he did show, it's questionable whether or not that's legit from him. I'm not as quick to rule it out as some people because you look at a lot of other shortstops who profiled similarly coming up, like Jose Reyes and Rafael Furcal. They didn't hit for any power in the minors either. And then they come up to the majors, and sooner than not, they end up with these 15-homer seasons. So you're talking about like a wiry 21-year-old who's going to fill out more and obviously has a good swing based on what he's shown with the batting average. So I could see him being that 12 to 15 homer guy consistently, and I think with everything else that would make him pretty close to elite. But Correa is he is the number one shortstop now. It's really no contest with the way Tulowitzki fell off in Toronto. So while Lindor's top five, I think it's still a distant. I think I have him fourth for next year. It's a distant fourth behind Correa's number one spot.
So are you concerned about sophomore slumps? Because this year was really the year of the rookie. I mean, unbelievable. And they're continuing it in the playoffs. Correa's been really good. Schwarber hit a just gigantic home run the other day. And, you know, Bryant was cold. I understand that. But for the most part, these rookies are doing great. Are you worried at all about the sophomore slumps? Like, maybe, yeah, you have to rank Correa number one, but are you going to back off on draft day because you realize the possibility that he falters in year two, like a lot of guys have recently?
It seems like it has happened more recently than I remember it. You know, for all the time I've been watching baseball, it seems like the rookies take the league by storm, and then maybe they adjust to them faster than they can adjust back. And sometimes they don't rebound all the way, you know, the rest of their careers. Jason Hayward still hasn't, for instance. Yasiel Puig, he's been taking a step back every year. Obviously, injuries weren't on his side this year, but I think it's enough of a concern now that I'm actually factoring it into my rankings at all these positions. But I think the players that you kind of just have to ignore it for are the ones who play those really premium positions, like Correa at shortstop and Lindor, like Kyle Schwarber, who is going to be catcher eligible next year. He's the top one after Buster Posey, just because there's no one else you could even really make a good argument for there. Now, you know, Posey's probably going to be like a second rounder. Schwarber might be fifth or sixth rounder. That's how far behind him I would put him, in part because of the fear of a sophomore slump. But I'm not just going to, like, I'm not just going to assume that they can't be who they were as rookies, because you still see, it's not a one-size-fits-all in any case. Mookie Betts had a great sophomore season, and he's the first one that comes to mind, but I'm sure there are others. Jose Abreu took a little step back, but it was still a very good season, so yeah, I'm not going to worry about it too much, but I am going to show it in the rankings some.
So would you rather have Chris Bryant or, man, who's even Chris Bryant or Chris Davis next year?
I would rather have Chris Bryant. But, you know, it's not the fairest comparison because Davis is... he's not exactly the model of consistency himself.
All right, Chris Bryant or Todd Frazier?
Yeah, you know what? Actually, the last month of the season, I was going to say Frazier up until then. Bryant leapfrogged him in my rankings for next year. But it has just as much to do with Frazier as Bryant. Bryant didn't finish the season very strong. And yeah, I think really locked up the Rookie of the Year award in the process. But yeah, Frazier was a dud in the second half. And yeah, that plays just as much into the rankings as any fear or, you know, maybe exaggerated fear of a sophomore slump.
Would you rather have Miguel Sano or Anthony Rendon?
I would rather have Rendon, I think. I'm just going to double check my rankings. Oh, you know what? It won't show up in the rankings because Sano's DH only next year.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, I am not kidding you. He did not play enough third base to retain eligibility there. Now, it's only going to take 5 games to gain it in season. So
all right, then yeah.
I think he'll probably gain it at some point next season, but I don't know how soon.
Oh, that is a big deal. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. I think either way I'd take Rendon. I like the way he finished the season as well.
All right. We can move on from that rookie discussion here. And you'd said something about Corey Dickerson in your end of season thoughts that you thought he might be a bargain next year.
Yep.
What do you think about Dickerson? Like what? I don't know. I think he's pretty darn good, and I'm perfectly prepared to take him as a... This might sound crazy, but I feel like a high-end number two, maybe like top 15 or 15th-ish outfielder next year. Is that too early for Dickerson?
Well, I actually just finished ranking my outfielders for next season. The column isn't up on the site yet, but it will be by the weekend, I'm sure. And you said high-end number two, top 15 range?
Yeah, like right around 15.
Well, I have him 24th, and which so low-end number two, high-end number three. And when you hear some of the names I have around that number 15 range, I think you'll agree.
All right, hit me with it.
It's like, Chris Davis for one, Nelson Cruz, Lorenzo Cain, Carlos Gonzalez, Charlie Blackmon, we're to 18 now. Kyle Schwarber, obviously, with the catcher eligibility.
Yeah, I don't know that any of those guys are slam dunks over Dickerson. I mean,
named three guys who hit 40 home runs this year, Adam.
I think Dickerson has that capability. I mean, how many did he hit in 2014?
He hit 24 in 130 games. So,
all right, I expect him to be over 30 in a full season.
In a full season, but we have yet to see him play a full season, and I don't think he's incapable of playing a full season. So don't misunderstand me. You know, the belief that obviously the injuries impacted him this year is why I think he can be a bargain next season. Apparently not if I'm drafting with you.
I haven't sat down and done rankings and really thought about it. Just it's kind of like off the top of my head, what do I think about Corey Dickerson? I think he's pretty darn legit, you know, and a better play. He hit .304 and played hurt, you know, and didn't play that much this year, and he slugged .536. And last year he hit .312 and slugged .567. For example, I know that Al loved Corey Dickerson, and he had him as a top 10 roto outfielder or a top 12 roto outfielder this year. So if you're still buying into what he did in 2014, then 24 does seem like a huge bargain for him. And I was thinking off the top of my head that he would go earlier than that.
And you're kind of making the argument I made in the column. I do like him in that general sense as well, but when you actually put names to paper, you're not going to take this prospective 40-homer guy over the players who are just doing it. Now, where Dickerson probably does enter the discussion is that group right after Schwarber, other guys who had disappointing showings this past year because of injuries, guys like Carlos Gomez and Yasiel Puig, Jacoby Ellsbury. Those are the guys I have in the 20 to 25 range, and I think Dickerson fits perfectly in with them.
Well, how many guys hit 40 home runs in back-to-back seasons? You know, like, Chris Davis comes to mind. He had 50 home runs, and then he was horrible the next year. So just because Nelson Cruz hit 40 home runs, it doesn't mean I expect him to do it again. You know what I mean?
I feel like... I don't feel like Davis is the greatest example there. I actually think home runs among the traditional roto stats, let's call them,
okay,
are one of the more repeatable from year to year, as opposed to like batting average or stolen bases. Now, there haven't been... I can't give recent examples because nobody's been hitting 40 home runs recently. I think Cruz actually did last year, but he was the only one, and they're... It had been a while since somebody had done that. So we kind of saw all the home run totals go up this year across the league. So I can't say, well, when's the last time somebody had back-to-back 40 homer seasons, because nobody was hitting 40 home runs, you know?
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, okay, wow. Jeez, a lot of guys. 9 players hit 40 home runs this year. That's incredible. Led by Chris Davis with 47, Nelson Cruz 44, Bryce Harper 42, Arenado 42, Donaldson and Trout hit 41, Bautista, Carlos Gonzalez, and Albert Pujols hit 40. Carlos Gonzalez hit 40 home runs. That is unbelievable. He was the best, and I never called this or anything, but it turns out in retrospect, the best buy low candidate in fantasy baseball history, Scott White. History!
Oh, I know. We were saying, I think just before the All-Star break, that it was over. You could go ahead and dump them. And
sure.
We're never jumping to that conclusion with a player with that kind of history. I think two of the most amazing stats for Carlos Gonzalez this year. He had 27 of the 40 home runs came in the second half, which is understandable. The 40 home runs were a career high for him. A guy we were routinely drafting in the first round just a few years ago. The 153 games he played were also a career high, again, for this former perennial first rounder. And yet, I still don't feel like I can trust him anymore going into next year. I still only have him 17th in my outfield rankings. It's just...
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know he used to be a first rounder, but he's let us down too many times.
He stopped running, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's a good thing. Just you know, basically just go up there, hit, and do whatever you do in the field, and just stop running and stop hurting yourself. Mookie Betts was another guy that caught your eye. All right, so if you think Corey Dickerson 15th is a little crazy, how crazy is Mookie Betts as a late first-round pick?
Late first round. That is going a little far. See, this is what I mean by you being more of a hot take guy than I am.
Right, no, I'm just throwing it out there. I just want to see what's going on.
I ranked Mookie Betts 7th among outfielders for next year. 7th. And, you know, I was defending that ranking to somebody on Twitter yesterday, and I told them I'm fully convinced Mookie Betts is the next Andrew McCutchen. You compare their numbers from their first full seasons in the majors, very similar. And in fact, Betts comes out ahead at a year younger and McCutchen in several categories. So I like that comparison. And obviously, McCutcheon's a first rounder. But to say Betts is already a first rounder, when I can't say, you know, the inseparable five of Harper, Trout, Stanton, McCutchen, Bautista, they're not even all first rounders for me. And I'm not going to take Betts over them yet. So That's going a little far for me, but I at least understand the point of view and think Betts, there will come a time, maybe as soon as 2017 when he's in the first round discussion.
Okay, fine, but he's clearly in the second round discussion, right?
I think I'd say that's fair, yeah. I mean,
discussion.
Bautista's definitely going to be, Pollock's the one I have 6th in between that group of 5 and Betts at 7. And I think Pollock might be a close call in the second round, but Betts will go very soon afterward, or at least he should.
Okay. Let's talk pleasant surprises and some disappointments from last year. I'll lead off here. A couple of pleasant surprises for me. AJ Burnett was a pleasant surprise. Now, it's not really the most fantasy-relevant thing, because we don't have to draft him next year. He's retiring. But I was surprised, and I think the lesson that I take away here is that, yeah, and we've said this a lot, but Pittsburgh and Ray Searidge, their pitching coach, is just a tonic for pitchers. And if you want to go one step further from AJ Burnett, okay, I'll say Jay Happ was a pleasant surprise, because Jay Happ with the Pirates was 7-2 with a 1.85 ERA and more than a strikeout per inning and a 1.03 WHIP. This is a guy who has a 4.13 career ERA and a 1.37 career WHIP with 7.6 strikeouts per nine innings. It blows my mind what Jay Happ did with the Pirates.
Man, can you imagine if they beat the Cubs in that wild card game and Happ was able to carry that over into the postseason, the amount of hype he would have going into next year would be off the charts.
Well, are you feeling good about Jay Happ next year?
Right now, I can't see myself drafting him in a standard mixed league, just because that there's so much mediocrity and the strikeout rate seems like such a fluke. And that's not something you should normally see take that big of a leap midway through a player's career. So I just want to see more of that before I buy into him. And there's so many starting pitchers to last a mixed league draft that I just don't think I'll ever get to him. But I would call him like an AL-only sleeper. He's somebody I might target in those leagues as somebody who could take that next step, maybe.
What, NL-only?
Yes, NL-only.
Yeah. My other pleasant surprise was Alex Rodriguez, who was the number 9 third baseman in points, number 8 in Roto. At 40 years old, he hit 33 home runs and slugged 430 and 423 in 2012 and 2013. Then obviously missed all of 2014 and came back and slugged 286 486 this season. So A-Rod was a big pleasant surprise. Now, I had kept saying, sell high, sell high, sell high. It's not going to last. It's not going to last. And I think I was right ultimately, but it took much, much longer than I expected. Last 2 months of the season, Rodriguez hit 191 with 9 home runs. He was out of gas, Scott. So how do you treat him going into next year?
Well, he's going to be DH only as well as Sano, with no hope of regaining third base eligibility, I'd say. And as unbelievable as it is that he did what he did in his age 40 season, turning 41 next year, it's going to be even more unbelievable. So I think when we're talking standard mixed leagues, he's actually going to be round 15 and beyond still. He's not going to be a hot commodity on draft day. As impressive and implausible as this season seemed like it was going into it.
You know what I want to see, Scott?
What do you want to see?
He'll get off to a bad start, get him out of there. Teixeira, DH or something. No, Teixeira can stay at first. Greg Bird, bring him up, let him hit.
Yeah, well, Teixeira's not going to last all year either. So let's not get ahead of ourselves, Adam. Bird's time will come for the Yankees next year, even if it's not from the get-go.
I'm sorry, I'm just so mad right now because Shin-Soo Choo just homered off of Marcus Stroman.
I wonder if he would have done that off David Price.
Exactly. And the Rangers are like a league average team in terms of OPS against lefties. They're very lefty heavy.
I mean, Shin-Soo Choo, you want to talk about guys who finish strong? That's picking up where he left off.
Yeah, he's top 20 outfielder. He finished in points league.
It's amazing. That was the most shocking discovery after, obviously with football going on, we couldn't have our heads as much in baseball in September. The most shocking discovery for me was where Chu wound up, because mid-season, I was dropping him, and even in 5 outfielder leagues, there just wasn't enough there to keep me, to keep him in my lineup. And I don't know that I can, I'm really thrilled about drafting him next year. I actually have him 30th in my outfielder rankings just because he finished in the top 20 this year and did a lot of what he did in his best years with the Indians. But he doesn't run anymore, and he's mid-30s. I just think there's a lot of room for him to disappoint if, by the time March rolls around, everybody's just valuing him on the full season numbers that got him in the top 20.
Yeah, well, it's funny because he was a total bounce back for me. I wanted to draft Chu in every league. I don't know that.
So you're right, just too late for it to help your team.
Yeah, I know.
Both his case and A-Rod's.
Yeah, he was definitely on one of my teams I picked him up at some point when he was doing really poorly, because I saw that he was still doing really well against righties, and the Rangers at that point had faced a lot of lefties. So I thought, I'll pick him up for like a week or two, or whatever, and then it just ended up, I ended up riding it out, which was good. But yeah, interesting to see where he goes. All right, how about any pleasant surprises you want to talk about?
Sure. I'm going to start with, I guess, kind of an obvious name, but maybe not in an obvious way. Dallas Keuchel was surprising to me. Coming off a good season, but 6.6 strikeouts per nine, and this is a case of a guy who I thought had maxed out his potential. He was a pitch-to-contact ground ball specialist, and that had some value in fantasy, but I actually thought it was more likely he would disappoint this year based on what he did in 2014, and he ended up taking this monster step forward, especially with the strikeouts. 8.4 per nine is where he ended up, including 9.4 per nine in his final 23 starts, as good as anybody who's not Kershaw and Sale. And Scherzer, I guess, would be the third one. But the point is, strikeout per inning guy who has all the peripherals he does otherwise, still an extreme ground ball pitcher, and very likely to maintain a low ERA because of that.
He's the man.
Yeah, I mean, probably the AL Cy Young, and I would say probably a top 10 fantasy pitcher going into next year.
Any other pleasant surprises for you?
Joey Votto.
Oh, yeah.
That is a guy who, you know, it's funny. Obviously, we were at the lowest of lows with him going into this year because he was coming off an injury-plagued year that seemed to confirm he wasn't the power hitter he used to be. And, you know, going into that year, we were kind of down on him. At least some people were, because he'd only hit 24 home runs the year before and he didn't have a high RBI total for an early-round first baseman. And if, despite all the other things he did well, people were saying, okay, he's not going to hit you 30 home runs, so therefore he's not an elite third baseman. Well, I think he answered that question this year definitively. I don't think he's going to make it beyond the second round in any league, any format. But here's the weird thing. He hit 29 home runs, so that was just five more than when everybody first got down on him 2 years ago. And only 80 RBI, seven more than he had then. So the problems, the reasons everybody were down on him in the first place, I guess, aside from injury, they were still there. Maybe not quite as glaring, but in a season when all these players were hitting 40 home runs, he still didn't reach 30. But I think it was kind of a be careful what you wish for sort of deal, because by disappearing in 2014 and then reappearing after sliding in the draft four or five rounds, I think it reminded people just how productive he is. And he doesn't need 30 home runs to be elite, even at a deep position.
Yep. All right, that's Joey Votto. Disappointments. I had two disappointments. Steve Pierce was one of them. He did hit 15 home runs, but he batted just .218, and I don't think I'll ever trust Steve Pierce again. And Billy Hamilton was another disappointment for me, but a guy that I might target if I can get him late enough in a points league, believe it or not. In a roto league, I think he wins you the steals category by so much that his value is almost wasted unless you trade him at some point. You know, you if you win the steals category by 1 or 50, you get the same amount of points for it. So you might waste your time. With Hamilton, you might overpay for him, in other words. But in a points league, I don't think he has to do that much in terms of batting average. Just hit like .250. Just hit .250 or something like that. And I think he could actually be a really, really good fantasy outfielder, Billy Hamilton. That's my take.
No, you're not wrong. I mean, I was the lowest on him, of the three of us, Al included, coming into the year. And part of it was the reason you mentioned you can only win steals by so much, and drafting him really kind of hems you into what you could do the rest of the draft. But part of it was because that seemed like the high point for his batting average, that 250-ish range, and sure enough, it fell. But you're right in that with all the steals he gets, and steals are worth 2 points, and you don't really have to factor in categories in a points league, he could still be great. I just worry now it's to the point where the Reds have to have some long-term concerns about him. Is this really the guy they want manning center for them for the next however many years? Because, you know, steals are great, but in terms of getting on base, he's kind of a black hole in their lineup.
Yeah, and I want to see him bat leadoff. Batting leadoff instead of batting ninth would be a big thing for me. I know you don't care as much about that, but it's a lot more at bats.
It is. Yeah. If it happens all year long, but it rarely seems to these days.
Okay, any major disappointments for you, Scott?
Man, Carlos Gomez is the first one that jumps out at me. Who I mentioned I still have in that top 20-25 range of my outfield rankings, just going on track record, but there isn't a lot of reason to be encouraged by his performance. Obviously, he missed some time with injuries here and there, but head-to-head points per game, he averaged less than even Hanley Ramirez, who he would be high on a disappointments list as well, I guess. But it seems like he got a lot more attention for his disappointment than Gomez did. Gomez, the home run rate was way down. The steals rate was way down. He got caught a lot. And the BABIP issues people worried about in the past finally came home to roost. So it was just a perfect storm of things gone wrong for him. And kind of a reminder of just how how finicky these numbers can be from year to year.
And I was always the biggest Carlos Gomez fan on this podcast, and I will definitely take Corey Dickerson ahead of Carlos Gomez next year.
It's fair.
But you have Gomez ahead, right?
I do, but, you know, they're the same tier.
You want one more disappointment, or you want to go to the emails, which are not disappointing?
How about Jeff Samardzija?
How about Jeff Samardzija?
We talked about a lot on the podcast during the year, but he's disappointing to me because I thought he had really taken the next step that year between the Cubs and Oakland. The strikeout rate was terrific, like ace level, and the walk rate was way, way down. And usually when you see that big divide for a pitcher who's has the raw stuff Samardzija does, you're talking about Cy Young Awards in his future. He goes to the White Sox, and it's just a disaster. And I guess if there was any concerns you had about him going into the year, it's that he was going from a pitcher's park to a hitter's park, but that doesn't explain that big of a difference. I'm hopeful that it'll be a case of him going to a new team with a new pitching coach, reworking his arsenal to get it back to when it's at its best. Because the thing about going to the White Sox, Don Cooper, he loves his cutter. Samardzija just started throwing the cutter a lot this year. And a cutter can be a great pitch if you know what you're doing with it. But if you don't, it's like a bad fastball, and it just gets pounded. And I kind of feel like that's what happened with Samardzija. I would value him about on the same level as a Clay Buchholz last year, a guy who you know has the underlying ability, but just it seems like so many hurdles that he's unable to clear. Hopefully that's the one big hurdle for Samardzija, though. It just remains to be seen.
Fantasy baseball at CBSi.com. Please put baseball podcast in the subject line. Addison from Atlanta says, "Dear Beyonce, Kelly, and Michelle."
I don't know.
Yes,
I
do.
Mean, is that TLC?
Beyonce,
Destiny's Child.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. Well, we're just gonna pretend you didn't say TLC.
Wasn't there a famous one in TLC too?
Yeah, there was Left Eye. Whatever.
Left Eye. I don't know who that is.
What was her name? Google it. The names of the TLC girls.
All right. Destiny's Child.
That's Destiny's Child. Yeah. Here's the question. What is your favorite Destiny? No. While Machado tried his best to carry me through the end of the season, I fell just short. I now have the second overall pick next season. It is an 8-team, 5x5 head-to-head categories league that counts OBP instead of average. Who would you recommend, assuming Bryce Harper goes number one? So, second overall pick in a 5x5 head-to-head categories league with OBP, assuming Harper's one, who's your number two?
Paul Goldschmidt. And I don't think it's so clear he's not number one anyway. He probably will be, but I think Trout's the definitive number three for me with those guys one and two.
Okay. Why is Harper clearly ahead of Trout?
Because I think the way Trout's game has evolved so that he's not a prolific base stealer anymore, or even really much help in the category at all, he's not even capable of the kind of numbers Harper put up this year. I don't know that Harper's going to be able to repeat those numbers either, but I feel like the ceiling for him is higher now that Trout's not the great source of stolen bases.
Wait a second, but Harper doesn't steal bases.
No, he doesn't, but he's a much better, a much closer strikeout to walk ratio, and
but what did I think? Okay. Give me the. But, do you have their numbers?
Because not
I don't think it's fair to say that Trout can't accomplish that. He's obviously hit well above 300, and his power just keeps on developing. I mean, why can't he hit 320 with 40 home runs?
I think Harper is the better bet for batting average now that, I mean, Trout is a guy who strikes out a noticeably more than Harper. A much higher, not a much higher percentage, but Harper struck out 131 times this year. Trout struck out 158, and he struck out 184 times last year. So that, to me, gives him a lower possibility of a 300 batting average than Harper, and he hasn't hit 300 either the last 2 years. So, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not saying it's unthinkable Trout could be better than Harper next year. I just don't think there's much of an argument to make for him over Harper.
I do.
Based on the way his numbers have gone these last couple years.
He's still been great for fantasy, even without the stolen bases. He's an amazing power hitter.
I know he has, but
yeah,
Harper,
and you have him third, I'm not saying.
Look at what Harper did, you know?
Yeah, but Harper
Harper's
hitting the 270s three straight years before last year, so I'm not sure he's going to be able to repeat that batting average. And let's not forget the main thing here. One of them is extremely injury prone and plays the game in a way that makes him injury prone. And
I thought he was a loafer.
No,
he's not. In the
outfield, he plays the game in a way that makes him extremely injury prone.
I was being sarcastic.
Yeah, no, but you know what? It's a good point because he's got a much higher chance of being choked out by one of his teammates, which would put him on the DL, Scott.
Oh, man.
I look forward. This is going to be a fun debate because I'm going to probably be on the Trout over Harper side for the entire offseason, and I might be on a lonely island. So I look forward.
You know what? Jose Bautista was closer to Harper in head-to-head points per game than Trout was this year. AJ Pollock was. Giancarlo Stanton was.
Well, first of all, this was a categories league.
I hear you, but
You know, the thing is, it's like there aren't that many guys who you can take and know that they're going to have great years. And like, you can't tell me that you feel the same level of security with AJ Pollock that you do with Mike Trout. And I know you wouldn't. And I don't feel the same level of security with Bryce Harper that I do with Mike Trout. Like, Mike Trout is not only one of the best, but also one of the safest picks in fantasy.
Except he was the one who was banged up in the second half, and his numbers were hurt as a result.
Okay, but that's 1 year. I mean, Harper has a much worse injury history. It's not even debatable.
History can change, my friend. Look at Nelson Cruz.
I get it, but history can repeat itself, my friend. All right, next email. Doug in Connecticut. Oh, let's see. These are long ones. Oh, this is just him wanting to talk about his league. Okay. I thanked you last year because I felt that you played a part in my winning my Roto League. I'm thanking you again this year. I finished second, but in our league, there's a decent payout if you place. Oh. I know that you all play in multiple leagues and that you've done so for many years, so I'm sure you've seen a lot of close finishes, but I can't imagine there have been many finishes closer than our league this year. In the waning moments of the season, I was in a flat-footed tie for first, but was nosed out when the ultimate winner moved up one spot in ERA, thanks to a single clean inning by Mark Melancon in a non-save situation. Arg!
Man, nice figurative use of body parts there. Nosed out.
Yeah.
Flat-footed tie.
And then he gave us an arg, and it was a pirate arg. Who ended up beating him. So
reminds
I don't know.
Me of Bart Roberts.
Yeah, yeah.
Our old pirating emailer.
That's
you know,
sucks.
Doug, how you could really thank us is you could fork over some of the winnings.
yeah, no,
just a suggestion.
That's a bad beat, but very, very entertaining. All right, next one is from Ben in Appleton, Wisconsin, who is the general manager/owner of Jack in the Bronx. That's his team name, Jack in the Bronx. I like that. He says, "Dear Mike, Tony, and Alvaro." Do you know them?
Alvaro should be a giveaway, but I'm not getting it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just wanted to give the podcast team a shout-out for all the helpful advice and banter throughout the season. I secured first place in my Roto League. Keep up the good work. And that's it. I forgot that I put a bunch of emails in here that were just people celebrating and thanking us. Because I thought it was nice trying to give
that
back to
nice.
Them. They give back
How
to
long
us.
Ago did you put these notes together?
These emails are actually from last week. We never got to read them.
Oh, okay.
And here's another one. It is from Evan. Dear Coco, George, Ham, and Enos. What is this stuff?
I don't know. They're just making stuff up now.
After four consecutive regular season top finishes, I am the proud owner of a shiny new gold trophy. So he had never won the championship, just regular season. So Evan is thanking us for his victory. So congratulations. Let's see if I have a real question here. I do. Petey from Slower Lower Delaware says, oh, this one I know. Michael, George, and Christian.
Those sound like, I mean, Michael, I'm assuming it's, I'm assuming Christian Leitner.
No, these are Batman.
Oh, okay.
Quick keeper right. question. Seven keepers, no penalty, keep as long as we want, 5x5 categories. Okay, so he's trying to figure out his last one. Urias, Salazar, Severino, Andrew Miller, K-Rod, Betances, Smiley, or Stroman? Urias, Salazar, Severino, Andrew Miller, K-Rod, Betances, Smiley, or Stroman?
I'm thinking Salazar and maybe Andrew Miller. He's the only – it would be between those two, but I think I'd always opt for the starting pitcher over the closer.
Yeah, I was thinking Salazar too. All right, we'll save the rest for a later podcast. Scott White, thank you for your off-season time.
Thank you, Adam. I'm going to go back to writing a football column.
Oh, multi.
You go back to watching baseball.
I will.
Like it's your job or something.
Don't steal third with two on, two outs. That's pretty
I know. Scary. It looks exciting.
Yeah. All right, that's it for Scott White, and I am Adam Azer. We will talk to you next week when we have Al Melchior back on. Thank you so much for listening, and please email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com.
Bye.